This podcast is brought to you by Equus Grooming Products, human-grade cosmetic ingredients.
Wow. So, Joey, I could use these products on myself?
You absolutely can. And you know what? It's easy rinsing. It lathers up real good. It's just clean, clean product.
Hook me up. Welcome to another podcast, Doc Halligan Unleashed with Joey Villani. We have a special guest on. Her name is Heidi Jo Markle, and she is the president and founder of Stop Poaching Now.
This is pretty exciting for me because, this kind of stuff I only see on TV. So now to have somebody on the show, it's pretty cool.
Well, yay. Well, let me first start by Joey, how I met Heidi. So we have a mutual friend, Michelle Burke, and she calls me out of the blue and says, "Hey, do you know anything about trypanosomiasis in dogs?" And I go, "No." And she goes, "Well, I have a friend who they need to make a vaccine for this protozoan for these dogs that are protecting the rhinos in Tanzania." And I'm like, "Huh, sounds good to me." So then we had a meeting in Malibu, and Heidi, take it away.
Oh, that was great. We have a beneficiary of ours who's of the legendary Born Free. You know, for those of you that are old enough, I mean, actually, it's older than all of us. I think we were barely if born by 1964 when it won Best Picture. But this gentleman had been portrayed in both Born Free and another wonderful movie called Walk with Lions. And his name is Sir Tony Fitzjohn. Yes, he's an OBE by the Royal Order. And yes, he went to Harry and Meghan's wedding and friends with all the royals. And he's been doing it pretty much almost as long as anybody else has that's living, protecting rhinos and most famously lions, because that's what was in Born Free. He was obviously a very young man at that time who had basically showed up for a 6-month internship and then stayed his whole life to dedicate to saving these animals. Absolutely amazing. If you ever have a chance to read Born Wild, you should definitely read it. And he was markedly our first beneficiary when I started with Sebastian, Cyril Watts, this charity 5 years ago. So, we started supplying drones and dogs and rangers to protect these animals, and also cultivating an educational program for kids so that would motivate kids to get involved in this important cause and, you know, grow up to be the protectors of these animals.
Well, and what was interesting, Joey, Heidi was telling me that they found these Belgian Malinois were better than anything to prevent the poachers from killing the rhinos and then shaving off the tusks. Share about that, Heidi.
Yeah, these dogs are quite remarkable, the Belgian Malinois. They are very intelligent and they train to sniff out munitions. Because what happens is the poachers will go into the field and they'll hide the munitions in the field and then come back later to kill the animals so that they're not caught with it. They'll come at, 3 a.m. and they'll know where their munitions are. And these animals go sniff them out, find them, and they apprehend poachers and they prevent. Usually when poachers see these dogs, they're like, "I don't care how much I was being paid. I'm out of here. I'm done with this job." So we really love these animals and what they do to save where drones and dogs are used in tandem. It's about a 90% effective rate in reducing poaching.
I can imagine that technology with drones was a game changer in basically for what you do. That's pretty interesting because I would have never thought of that, but it makes total sense. And so I can just about imagine, but the Belgian Malinois, it's, I got to tell you, they can be a very scary dog. Those are the dogs you usually see with military, state police, and the ones that you don't want to get too close to, but they're still one of the only working breeds that are still out there. So that's, you know, that's really cool. And I think I would run real fast too.
Well, I don't think that they would look at you as a threat, and they probably would lick your face, Joey.
So Heidi, tell us about why they're trying to obtain the horns, what the horns are used for, and how they're recruiting these people to kill these rhinos.
Okay, so the fact is that there's less than 26,000 rhino left on the planet in Africa and Asia in the wild. And it's all built from mythology and legend that somehow, if you snort a rhino horn or drink it in a tea, you'll become as strong as a rhino, you know, or in the case of sex, wow, look at you, you know, you'll be very virile. Truth is that they cut the rhino horn with Viagra and Cialis. So yeah, it works. But guess what? You didn't need the rhino horn because it's just made of hair and fingernails and toenails. You know, that's all it is. It's keratin. So basically, we're putting this animal in extinction because we're allowing this legend to propel itself. And even though a lot of them know this isn't true, just the perception that you have to be very wealthy to, you know, offer your guests rhino horn, just like shark fin soup or something like that. It's a delicacy, and it makes you look, God, if I'm serving that, I must be doing very well and prestige. So it's just very sad when we're putting an ecosystem at risk, an animal, a species into extinction over something that's beyond silly.
So this is more of a status symbol than anything else, what it sounds like, which is completely crazy because it's easier to get the Viagra right at the drugstore. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of like the whole monkey brains thing as well, where, you know, they think it's, you know, euphoric and all, and you put these poor animals in tremendous pain. And like you said, it's far as extinction, and that's just horrible.
Yeah, well, they sometimes the poachers don't want to waste a bullet. So they if the first bullet just downs them and they're still alive, they will hack off the rhino horn while they're alive so that they don't waste another bullet. You know, plus, you know, maybe someone will hear that second bullet. So better just to kill, you know, they don't care that the animal is suffering so tremendously. It's just beyond me. And the other thing is, they could, if they wanted to, not put the animal in extinction, they could just cut the rhino horn off, like a lot of vets do, just to make them less of a target. And but the urban myth, or the Asian myth, I should say, says that the horn that's closest to the bottom is more special than the top of the horn. I mean, it just, you can't win with this cultural problem. You know, and I really call it a call. It has nothing, you know, I've got plenty of Asian friends that are, you know, super damn cool and sticking up for animals. It's not about, you know, anybody's DNA. It's about a culture that will support this kind of treachery.
What's the penalty when they get caught?
It really depends on the country that they're in. In Botswana, oh, you don't mess around with Botswana. You can be put to death for this. But in some places, even in South Africa, you get maybe $1,000 fine. So it's really worth the risk, you know. So just so you know, a full developed male rhino horn, street value of the horn, and I'm talking like in packets like cocaine, can go to about $900,000. So it's like they're walking around like a Brinks truck. You know what I mean? Take one down, you got a Brinks truck. It's a lot of money. Now, the poachers might only get paid $100 to take the animal down, but that's a lot of money for them if they're trying to feed their families. So they'll take that gig.
Right. That's what was, I mean, I learned so much from you because I hate to say, why are so many people ignorant about animals going extinction Well, you know, why do we not really hear about that very much?
You know, that's the major problem we're trying to tackle, Doc, is just making kids and people aware that this is a major problem, that it's really not any group or any person's right to put an animal in extinction that affects all of us, because that also affects the trees, the water, the other animals. And when they don't coexist together, like, for example, elephants are considered the great land architects. What they do is they divine the water, they find where the water is, and they dig trenches and holes, and now all the animals can drink the water. So they all keep doing their thing and planting more trees along their 50-mile-a-day journeys. So they eat the trees and then they plant it elsewhere. So they're really important to the ecosystem. So, you know, you getting a big bedazzled tusk in your living room or in your showcase that's carved is really just saying, I am destroying the world. That's what you're saying to everybody. And if it was shown that people that have those things are destroying the world, and everybody understood that, they wouldn't be so popular.
So, Mike, I got a question. This might be a stupid question. So let's just say that I'm one of those people and I have the money, and for some whatever reason is I want a rhino horn, and I bring it. Now, can I get charged for owning it? Because I think that that's where it has to stop. I mean, if you don't have anyone to purchase, if you don't have anyone to buy it, at the end of the day, it's going to trickle down where, okay, let's do something else. I mean, is the penalty
such a good point? Such a good point. Listen, if you had a bowl of cocaine on your table, and the police came in, you'd go to jail.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So I feel like it should be the same thing. I completely agree that there has to be laws against owning these kind of things. And that way, at the very least, they'd be hidden. You know, people display these in Hong Kong in their, you know, penthouse apartments with pride, or Shanghai or Beijing or wherever. So yeah, we don't see it around us here in Los Angeles. No one's ever seen a bedazzled horn, you know, or not horn, but a tusk. The tusks, are the ones that are the great for the carvers. The carvers love carving the tusks. The horn, not so much. It's really about making the medicine, from the horn. That's the big value there. So it's a little bit different. You're never going to buy a horn. You're going to buy a tusk, which is ivory.
And aren't there different types of rhinos? And certain of the rhinos are much more closer to extinction than others?
That's correct. That's correct. There's far more white rhinos than there are black rhinos. There's far fewer. And if you're talking about the Javanese rhino, there's just, you know, a few dozen left. So it's just outrageous.
Wow.
Well, and I used to work at the San Diego Zoo when I lived in San Diego pre-vet. And I remember Dr. Hoischley was my mentor, and he said every species that goes extinct is one more closer to man. And he was a very important role model for me, because you don't really think about, oh, it's just that one's going to go extinct. But like you said, it does, it affects the entire ecosystem in the world.
That's 100% true. And the rate of extinction is so rapid. And the we just lost the last northern white male rhino in 2018. Sudan was his name. And there's two females. And now we're spending millions and millions trying to reproduce these rhinos, you know, and it's so silly. If we would just stop and make the penalty so excruciating. I mean, I think it should be penalty of death at some point for killing these animals. That's what I think.
A life for a life, a life for a life. Why, you know, it should be.
Yeah. Well, it's a genocide, actually. People make me say, I say genocide. I'm told I'm supposed to say an animal genocide because I'm not supposed to compare them to humans. But, you know, we are animals. We are a species of animals. We have to stop thinking that we are the only animal, I mean, the only species on this planet, and stop pushing and crowding off the rest of the species. we have to peacefully coexist and protect them so that we interact and we respect their territory, their land, not encroach upon their land, and let them exist for our benefit, to live, to have oxygen, because that's what we're doing. We're gonna kill all the species, and then you watch how hard it is to get oxygen. That's going to be really fun. And that's why your mentor said that.
Well, you could say genocide on this show because we're all about the pets, okay? So we don't care what anyone else says. We're all about the pets.
And now we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Why would you use something on your pet that you wouldn't use on yourself? This was the philosophy of Equus Grooming Products in 1991 and still is today. We love our pets. They are members of our family. Don't use grooming products that either don't disclose their ingredients or are not honest about what's in them. Equus Grooming Products are the finest quality available. Human-grade cosmetic ingredients and food-grade ingredients, not industrial grade, and backed 100% by a money-back guarantee. Visit Equus.com and enter Doc H at checkout for a 15% discount. That's Equus.com.
And Heidi, so you're a producer. So Heidi, how did you get involved in the cause, and when did you start Stop Poaching Now?
Okay, so I started Eclectic Pictures in 2004, and immediately the gravity pulled me towards socially conscious films. So I did do, as well, some action films, some entertainment films, Olympus Has Fallen, series I've worked on, and some wonderful entertaining films. But my true love has been always these films that have impact to make people think and reconsider their actions, or even my personal thoughts. When I was one of my films I'm most proud of is called Lovelace, about the infamous Linda Lovelace, and how she was, everybody had sort of the wrong idea about her, thought that she just loved pornography, when actually her husband, had her at gunpoint for their 3-year marriage, and she had to do everything he told her to do. So I thought, before I made that movie, that prostitution was like Pretty Woman, not to be so like all prostitution was like that, but I thought women actually made the choice. I didn't know that they were groomed into this specific vocation. So that was a wonderful thing. Every time I do a movie, I learn so much. So cut to about the time I start, right before I started Stop Poaching Now, after Lovelace, I started working on this wonderful movie about endangered species. And I started learning so much about, that there were, for example, there were less than 4,000 tigers on the planet. And this project I have called Save the Cat was about a young girl who gets in trouble all the time, gets community service at the zoo, and she understands that all these animals are going extinct, and she starts becoming an activist for the animals. And I thought, this is the movie I have to make. So then it was thinking, well, what I have to, if I make movies like this, they have to benefit the animals. And so I thought, well, I've done stuff for WWF and raised money for them, but they're so big, I just need something very specific that will stop the poaching of these animals. So that's where Stop Poaching Now was born. We haven't made that movie yet, but we're actually turning it into a series as we speak. So it's life imitating art, I think, is how things come about.
Wow. And I love your educational component. Tell us a little bit more about that for Stop Poaching Now.
Well, that is an interesting story, because when we started this, my partner's daughter goes to the International School of Los Angeles, and they have a wonderful educator there. Her name is Miss Anna Scotti. And when she found out we were doing this, she said, oh my gosh, you must come in and start, teaching these kids all about it. And we look at each other, we said, oh my God, how are we going to do this? We're not professional teachers, educators at all. But let's give it a whirl. And what we did is we did these giant, at the time it was Skypes, before we had Zoom. And we do these Skypes with Africa, and we would bring these boots on the ground people into the auditoriums with 400 kids, and the kids would go crazy. That all their arms were up. They were so enthusiastic. They wanted to know more about protecting these animals and what you can do for animals. And I was like, oh my God, I was never like that at 12 years old. I was like listening to the firefighters going, oh, I'm not going to be a firefighter. It's nice that you do that and I appreciate it. But this was different level of enthusiasm. So I know that we're onto something with the kids, that they love animals and they want to do more for these animals and they don't want these animals to go extinct. And if we can harness that energy and we can inspire this next generation to do more than we did, then these animals might have a chance.
So in other words, we have to hold on until that point. You know, we have to fight to keep these animals safe and keep them going. So hopefully the next generation cares a little bit more than the current one.
Joey, that is exactly right. And that's why at Stop Poaching Now, our mission is to protect and educate, because it takes a generation, like to your point, to wait 10 years, 20 years until these generations come up where they're in politics and they have influence. They have influence very young, but you know what I mean, where they can really mandate changes by voting and whatnot. So in the meantime, we have to protect. We have to have dogs and drones and rangers to protect them and political allies to penalize. Everything that we've talked about in this show in a few minutes encapsulates where we need to go.
No, and I do feel the millennials have more of a heart for animals in general. Do you guys feel that, since we're none of us are
absolutely here? because in the pet, I can tell you, just in the pet grooming industry, millennials aren't having the children that they had during Gen X or your generation, Karen. You know, I'm just joking. But no, it's the truth, because you see it. So just pets alone, and having pets will translate down to wildlife as well. So we have bigger hearts and we pay attention more and we're more environmentally friendly. So more and more and more, we just have to, Heidi Jo and your team, I applaud you, because I can only imagine, you know, what you guys are going through to, keep this fight going.
It's a tough battle, but thank goodness there's a lot of people that are aware and they care. The elephant is very iconic, and people know how smart these animals are and how they have families, and they don't want to see these animals traumatized. I mean, they're actually, elephants have a compassion element of their brain that humans don't even have, or a much smaller version than elephant. They're very compassionate. They mourn their dead. They care about their children even more, believe it or not. So we can't just kill them like they don't matter.
No, and we won't. That's why Joey and I are doing this podcast, is to help pet owners and just pet causes in general. So that I think by education, people will have that knowledge, and then they will help stop that. I don't know of anybody that wants to see these animals harmed. I think that the zoos are controversial, but some of the zoos do the captive breeding programs. When the species get really low, they have the ability to then try to, increase the number and then release them back to the wild. So I think zoos do play, like with the pandas, they've been able to do that.
It's very important. And it's very important also that people don't just say, oh, that's too bad and I don't want that. Do something about it. Get involved, volunteer, write a check, do something. There's a lot of good groups out there that are making this fight. We give, we're all about resources to the cause, either education directly to the cause, education or protection. So we fund a lot of great groups on the ground that are making an impact and making a difference. So you got to get out there and vote with your checkbook and make something happen here, because if we all pull together, if everybody put a dollar in the whole world, that's almost $8 billion. We would not have a poaching epidemic anymore.
How do we find you? How do we get the information that we need to?
You find me on stoppoaching-now.org. But if you just put Stop Poaching Now, you'll see us come up, stoppoaching-now.org. And we're on Venmo at the same name. But check out our website. You can see our educational programs. You can see what we're doing and who we're supporting in Africa, in Asia. And you know, we want more educators out there. We have 5 internationally that we're supporting right now. We would like to go to 500, you know, in the next couple of years. So we want to get more education out there, the better. We're just broken to Laos, and we want to go, you know, wide in Asia. That's where we think if we could get to the kids in Asia, that's the most important. That's where we can debunk the cultural myths.
And you do have a list of events that are coming up for people on the website that's updated.
Yes. We have an event right before Christmas. We have a boutique and art show. Please check that out. Nothing better than to give a rhino painting to your darling for Christmas or Hanukkah. So it's really great. So we have a virtual event coming up on November 28th. Check it out.
Really, thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. Anytime. I love being with you guys. I love what you're doing. I love that you're bringing the animal world together to support all the different things that our animals, you know, giving voice to the voiceless. We just have to.
Yep, we do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
And now Doc Halligan's Medical Minute.
If you have a purebred dog or cat, or you're thinking about buying a purebred dog or cat, you want to research hereditary diseases, because more than 400 genetic diseases have been identified in purebred dogs and 180 in purebred cats. And so what that means is, due to years of inbreeding, because people are demanding specific purebred pets, your pet may have recessive genes that are not healthy, which could end up costing you hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. So sure, before you go to buy a purebred cat or dog, please look them up and see what kind of diseases they're susceptible to. And also, if you have a purebred right now, you want to research that, because you might be able to prevent a heart problem from developing by taking care of their teeth, or arthritis by not letting them get overweight. So it's really important, if you have a purebred, that you know what types of diseases they're predisposed to because of inbreeding.